guy who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal. A sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gijp.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's when we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's the kick. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is this!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself and Buster welcome back from his holiday, looking very tanned and fresh-faced as Jay. And Matthew Grant also joins us. How are we doing, guys?
Not bad, but I'm burned, so I've definitely not got a tan.
Yeah, I'm alright.
Lovely pink colour.
I'm slightly tongue-in-cheek, it must be said, but we'll start as we mean to go on. A fantastic 2-1 victory over Aberdeen on Saturday, making it 4 wins in the spin, 5 in our last 6, and Jay, it really does give us a fantastic chance of finishing in that top 6, which, as we discussed last week, seemed so, so unlikely. The back end of February, coming into March, it was almost daft chat about the prospects of the top 6.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the kind of situation where we got ahead of ourselves once or twice over the last few months. I think after Barakov left and McGee came in, we obviously had quite a good start, and it just seemed that every so often we were getting, you know, a little bit carried away and looking above us rather than below us. And yet, I think the last couple of weeks on the podcast in particular, we've maybe learned our lesson and we've tried to kind of keep the heat and look at the relegation zone. But we've gotten to a point now where we are 2 games away from the top 6, and I think it would be stupid not to kind of acknowledge that now. Regardless of your opinions on McGee, myself included, you can't really disagree in what he's done since he's came in, particularly in the last 6 games. We've been absolutely fantastic, and you know what, 5 wins from 6 games is tremendous form, regardless of whether you're still thinking we're in a relegation battle or you're thinking we're on the verge of a potential European spot. We're in fantastic form at the moment, and you can't really you can't be too negative, and you certainly can't rule us out going up to Inverness and getting a win or a result at least. And then, you know, you're going into the last game before the split at home against the Celtic side you've already beaten at Celtic Park. So I think in the run-up to these 3 games, I was very much of the opinion that we had to get points on the board, because anything from these 3 games was going to be a bonus, and it was just about getting as much sort of as many points between ourselves and Dundee United and Kilmarnock, etc., going into these 3 games. And instead, you know, what happened on Saturday has really set us up to get into these last 2 games. The pressure's essentially off now, but we can go in, and if we can get into the top 6, considering where we were when McGee first came in, it would be absolutely fantastic.
Buster, the build-up to the game was overshadowed, I suppose, by the virus that hit the squad. The under-20s game last Tuesday was cancelled, and then there was talk of a potential postponement of the game. There was very few players had trained in the build-up right up until the Friday. That being said, there wasn't many changes to the team. The 2 changes in the centre of the park were enforced through injury already, and then Ben Hall was the only one to miss out with the virus. That being said, again, the guys that did play and perhaps played through a bit of fatigue and illness really put on a show. I'm thinking particularly guys like Marvin Johnson, who were told to consider as a major doubt before the game. A fantastic shift and really standout performances all over the park.
Yeah, you're right. You know, as you say, there was guys like Johnson put in a shift. You know, if you've ever tried to play a game of fives or whatever, when you get a wee bit of head cold, you know how off-putting it can be. So, you know, for guys like Johnson, and you know, I think Chris Cadden as well, you know, people wouldn't have for them to put in a shift. And, you know, for the team to come away with a victory, it was great of them. You know, it just shows what they're willing to go through in order for each other, for the team. As you said, there was Ben Hall missed it. Kieran Kennedy came in. Kennedy's a kind of strange one for me. He's kind of solid defensively, but I think it was yourself that said to me as well, when he's got the ball at his feet, you're always waiting on that mistake. He's a wee bit raw there. And I said to Jay on Saturday, I like Jack Leach. He's very simple. You know, he's not flashy. He's not going to go and beat six players and then, you know, square it across the goal. He gets the ball. He does what he needs to do. 5-yard pass here, 5-yard pass there. I think he's a pretty decent player. And, you know, if he's going to put in performances like he did on Saturday, it'd be good to see a bit more of him as well. I think Connor Ripley at times made 3 or 4 great saves as well to keep the, you know, the ball at the net. Basically, the 2 or 3 of them coming through a crowd of players as well. So it was basically just a great team performance. As you say, there was talk of the virus. I seen chatting, you know, the Steelman online boards as well, you know. Maybe that was McGee talking up to get in their heads. You know, who knows? I know there was obviously a couple of sick players, but maybe it was overplayed a wee bit. And even if it wasn't, you know, as I say, it was a fantastic result. McDonald and Moult up front with Johnson, I suppose, as well. You know, the three of them are really showing that they, you know, defences should really fear them, no matter who they're playing.
Matt, it was possibly the most special afternoon that we've had at Firth Park since the playoff win over Rangers. Everyone turned up. The atmosphere has just been that bit better in the last couple of weeks. There's a real confidence flowing throughout the team.
Yeah, it seems things are just overall on the up. I mean, there's also been better performances, have been better. You know, the fans are getting behind them. I know there was always a bit of scepticism about McGee coming back. A lot of people weren't very happy about it, but I think, you know, as Jay said, the results are sort of beginning to speak for themselves now in the performance. And I thought Saturday was fantastic, given the position we were in. I'll also give McGee some praise, because I thought he made some interesting tactical decisions, because I thought Cadden still looked pretty fresh when he went off. I think it was early, you know, about 52-53 minutes, and he sort of brought on Ainsworth to stretch him a wee bit. I found that quite interesting, that he's not had much game time. His form has not been great, but, you know, there probably were other options there. And he's brought him on and sort of stretched him a bit and give him something else to think about, because over the last few weeks, we saw against Dundee United, a lot of their, especially second half and week passing Friday, a lot of their attacks were coming down the left-hand side, so it just gave the fullback something to think about. Because Aberdeen are quite strong there with Considine and Shinney. But no, I think overall, the enjoyment of going to football has been a lot better the last couple of weeks, and long may that continue. You know, it's a bit of a shame the international break is going to maybe curtail our momentum a wee bit, but it'll be good. I think we'll do well at Inverness, and I hope the fans turn out against Celtic, because it could be, depending on results go away and the remaining fixtures for those in hand and their own up at Inverness, it could be really important to come out and get behind the team. So yeah, I hope the fans do that.
Jay, Matty talked about the substitution on Saturday, that when Cadden went off, there was a few eyebrows raised, that must be said. And I guess similarly, when Dom Thomas was introduced the week previous against Dundee United, again, it seemed a bit surprising that he came on and played in the centre of the park. These gambles are beginning to pay off for McGee. Maybe initially they weren't quite as successful, and that caused a bit of a backlash from the supporters, but when they come off, it's a very pleasing situation, and it does make the manager look a hell of a lot more intelligent.
Well, and I would be interested to see if there was any more to the Cadden one, because I think it was I mean, Matty says, you know, 52 minutes or so. I'm pretty sure it was about 48, because I remember, you know, we kind of looked at the scoreboard to see how long he'd been on the park. And I think when you're making a substitution that soon after half-time, it's maybe natural to assume that it's perhaps a niggle, or perhaps, you know, perhaps Cadden wasn't feeling particularly well at half-time because of the virus. And McGee said, we'll give it a couple of minutes in the second half, see how you feel when you're out there, son, on those lines. So I don't want to get too, you know, down the road of it being a tactical masterstroke. I think a couple of minutes into the second half, there's probably other factors that come into it. But it's certainly, you know, you can't fault what he has done in the last five or six games. As I've said, tactically, we've looked a lot stronger. There have perhaps been a lot fewer, yeah, I suppose there have been fewer of those kind of strange tactical decisions. He has tried things in the past, such as, you know, Johnson up front and things like that, that haven't worked. It appears he's maybe learned from those. But, you know, like any manager, if you make decisions that are perhaps against what is expected, then you're going to live or die by them, to use a terrible cliche. You know, if they go well, then folk are going to praise you for them. You're going to look like a tactical genius. And if they fail, like they have done a lot in the past, then you're going to leave yourself open to criticism. So, you know, Saturday wasn't for me a game where there was any particular tactical expertise on show. I think that they got the lineup correct. I think particularly in the midfield, because he doesn't seem to fancy Leach all that much, it may have been that he perhaps looked to try and put Law back in there, or tried to do something that he, you know, the same sort of idea that he did at Tynecastle. Instead, he kept it simple, brought Leach in alongside Gomez, and it worked fantastically. As for the substitutions, Ainsworth came on early enough that I would be more inclined to believe it was something to do with Cadden's fitness or something along those lines. And obviously Fletcher late on was perhaps just to run the clock down.
Well,
I think he's touching up here, though. I watched Cadden's reaction when he got taken off, because I was surprised by it. And actually, there was one point it looked like he was almost not stopping about it, but Robinson actually grabbed his arm at one point and said something to him just before he sat down. But well, that would indicate to me that he probably felt he's fit. Whether they believed he was fit enough is something different, but he obviously felt he was fit enough to carry on.
Just interesting. I mean, at the time, I think I did say that when we were talking about it at the game, one of the, you know, one of the potential theories could have been that we had went out a certain way and McGee had realised that Aberdeen had changed tactically, in which case then, yeah, he would deserve a lot of credit for that if he's responded straight away in the second half by replacing Cadden Wainsworth to combat something Aberdeen have done. It's one of those ones where, unless, you know, someone asks McGee the question in the press conference, we're never really going to know. But it was early enough that I think it leaves a little bit of doubt as to exactly why the substitution was made.
I think he had reacted in any other way but disappointment, though, whether he had been injured or whether he didn't feel that it was justified that he was being taken off, that would have been disappointing. He's put so much into every game since he's been given a chance. Then, if he was to react by sauntering off lackadaisically, you'd be kind of be surprised at that. So, I think his reaction, you can't really read that much into it.
Well, I suppose it's one of those. If the boy was blowing at his backside now, then he's possibly quite happy to go off. But no, I get what you're saying. You would you'd expect him to be a bit miffed at it. See, because his performance has been great.
Oh, he's been fantastic. Absolutely.
No, I think there was one run in particular. I think he picked up at the edge of own 18-yard box in the first half, and basically just ran in the corner and won as a corner. And you thought the whole way, you know, he's going to have to turn back or. I think it was Shea Logan that was chasing him back, and I actually was surprised how quick Cadden was, that he actually continued to run with the ball and outstrip him on a corner. And you just think that's great legs to have. We've had it on one side with Johnson. He's a great outlet to go forward, but it's just Cadden's energy box to box is just fantastic. So no, he's been great lately.
Just a few more points on the game. The sending off of Barry Robson, he graced us with his presence for all of about 90 seconds before getting sent off for. The more I see it, the more I think it's quite a vicious elbow in Scott McDonald, it must be said. Completely merited a red card, and it was no surprise to see the referee brandish it so quickly, Buster.
Definitely not. You know, you were on your periscope at the time, getting people who couldn't make it to the game a wee sort of insight to what was happening. And you managed to capture that perfectly. But, you know, when I see it on TV as well, Barry Robson sort of pushes Gomez to one side and then he's just throws an arm up in McDonald's face and, you know, takes him out, basically.
He does have that wee look as well, though, doesn't he? He's aware that McDonald's there.
That was the thing that kind of surprised me. I've never really thought Barry Robson is being, you know, that type of player. He can go in for a hard tackle and things like that, but I think I would always maybe put him alongside someone like Keith Lasley, who I suppose fans of other teams kind of look at and say he's a dirty player. But, you know, he'll go in for a hard tackle, but I've never... He seems like a genuine professional, seems like a reasonable guy. He was obviously an ex-teammate of Scott McDonald, and yet, just what you're saying there, when you watch it, it's the look. He has a wee look, and then basically assaults Scott McDonald. There's absolutely, you know, it's a ridiculous foul or a ridiculous assault on a football player, and there's absolutely no question it was a red card. I mean, you just need to go on. 9 times out of 10, if there's a red card in a game, there will still be someone somewhere claiming that it wasn't. And yet, when you go into any forum, Pine Bovril, wherever, you know, it's widely accepted through the Aberdeen support that it was just absolutely ludicrous. And I think I've even read Aberdeen fans saying that he should be thrown out of the club for it, which I think is a bit harsh, but it just seemed to be so out, particularly when you're just on the park. If he'd been on for the whole game and perhaps McDonald had been having a wee nibble at him and wind him up or something like that, then maybe you could at least stretch to understanding it. But it just seemed to be so bizarre that he comes on the park and within, you know, 90 seconds he is basically assaulting Scott McDonald and then has the cheek to look surprised when the red card comes out.
What's absolutely fantastic about it is we talked Barry Robson up in his recent performances for Aberdeen in last week's podcast. So we'll start talking about the Inverness players in more depth in next week's podcast, and hopefully a few of them get sent off as well.
Ian Vigors, top look.
Sorry, were you going to add something in there, Buster?
No, I was just going to say that's, you know, it's basically what you were saying there. It's kind of strange that he was literally just in the park, and as I say, he didn't really foul Gomez, so to speak, but he sort of had a wee sort of a push out at him, you know, won the ball, pushed, sort of gave him a wee sort of shove. You know, I don't think Gomez was too happy with that either, to be fair, but by the time Gomez had even turned around to react, he'd already whacked Scott McDonald in the face, and as you said, it's not as if he'd been on for even 5 minutes where maybe a couple of players had a wee kick at him or whatever. I don't understand, you know, where it came from, to be fair.
I think kind of looking at it from an Aberdeen point of view, which I can't really do as I'm not an Aberdeen fan, but you know what I mean, if he's come on, Robson is a player that has won domestic silverware before. Probably coming to the end of his career, he must be absolutely desperate to have one last hurrah. And they're trailing 2-1. Maybe he's just kind of, the occasion's got the better of him. He's come on determined to make a mark, and unfortunately, he's done it with his elbow in Scott McDonald's jaw. So
I think you're spot on there, because I think, you know, Buster mentions the wee push on Gomez, but I think, you know, he pushes Gomez, elbows Scott McDonald, and then, you know, it's not a bad tackle, but he goes in for a full blooded like sort of meaty challenge, wins the ball, but goes in hard on Jack Leach after that. So it just seems as though he's been out there completely riled, completely up for it, you know, full of aggression, and he's just channeled it in completely the wrong way, which is surprising because, you know, he is a player with a lot of experience, a player that you would expect to be a lot calmer in those situations, and it does seem as though someone's sort of flicked a switch just before he's came on and he's just went out to do it.
I'd maybe get him tested. He's obviously on the performance enhancing drugs. Roid rage, that's what it was.
Barry Benoit.
Let's talk about one of our own players. Louis Moult, the winning goal for the second week running, he's just brilliant. There's just so much to love about the guy. He works his arse off week in, week out. His goal scoring has been absolutely tremendous this season. He just seems like such a likeable bloke as well. He replies to every message he gets on the internet. Just so enthusiastic to play with Motherwell Football Club. It's great to see. He plays with a smile on his face. There's we've kind of already started to place our votes for Player of the Year. In my opinion, there's no one that comes anywhere near the levels that Louis Moult's hit this season. And if he can do it again against Inverness, and then the following week against Celtic, we're certain for the top six.
Well, I think the way it works out, to be honest with you, if the results fall our way and we beat Inverness, you know, we can guarantee top six in 2 weeks' time, I think. But back to Louis Moult as well. The guy, as you said, I don't think there's... We could probably talk for an hour, say the same thing 15,000 times, and nobody would complain about it, because he doesn't get enough praise. He's been in the media the last couple of, you know, days, week or so, and you know, he's maybe finally getting noticed by the media. But as we've said, you know, for the second or third week of the season, when, you know, whenever it was he started scoring, he's got a special talent there. His work rate is unreal. He's kind of tall, but he's not a big lad, but he wins just about every header going. The one where he headed it down to McDonald and moved inside, he jumped up, headed it, and started to move inside on the one movement. And if it wasn't for the fact, you know, if he'd shot six inches to the right, he was busting the net with a volley that would probably have been goal of the season. You know, probably won him that Puskas award, whatever it is, with FIFA. He's a phenomenal player, and, you know, it's... As me and Jay rightly said on Saturday, the whole crowd, as he lobbed the goalkeeper, the whole crowd, you know, inhaled. The place went a wee bit silent. The ball was still 6 to 8 yards out, and Louis Moult was running away with his arm up, shouting "Yes!" It was surreal. To be fair, I wasn't sure the ball was even going to go in, and he was away celebrating. Yeah, you know, there's things I'd like to say about Louis Moult, but we like to keep it a wee bit PG. So I'll just say I like him.
There's not really much to add to that. And one of the posts, I assume that's the one you're talking about that nearly won the Puskas Award, yeah?
Oh, that was unreal. It was unreal.
Right, well, that took an unexpected turn there, but... Well,
I don't think I'm doing superlatives on Liam. Seriously, I think the guy's just unbelievable. I think what... His work rate's phenomenal. Great example, young kids. He loves scoring goals. He works hard for his teammates. He's not scared to tackle. Buster says he's great in the air. But I think one of the real moments for me was when... And he still does sort of get played out of position on occasions, because they sort of rotate that front three with Johnson, and occasionally he drops into a 4-4-2 to give us a bit of stability. And he runs like channels wide left. If you watch the highlights of the game at the weekend... He started the second half where he left. Johnson was actually up top, and he never complains about it. He must be just desperate to be in front of goal, and not once does he complain about putting a shift in for anyone else. And he's absolutely brilliant.
I think in terms of football players, he's probably the perfect Motherwell player. You know, just in terms of, he's obviously got the ability, he's got, you know, he's talented in all the different areas that are going up for headers and, you know, scoring goals, and he's got quick feet, he's got a bit of pace. But he's also got that, you know, that attitude that you want to see. He never gives up. He works and works and works. But he's also got that kind of rapport with the fans as well. I remember at one point, I think it was just after he, you know, you're talking about him playing in the left. I think it was in the first half when he played the ball across to Johnson, and Johnson just put it narrowly over, and Moult turned to the crowd and was like, you know, come on, and getting everybody behind the team. I think he is just one of those guys that ticks every single box as far as a Motherwell player goes. And if he continues, if we manage to hold on to him for a few years, and he continues in the way he is, then he is a Motherwell legend, a modern day Motherwell legend in the making.
Well, I hope they're already talking about a new contract with him, seriously. Because
it'd be an absolute travesty if we're not.
Because someone will come calling. I mean, he'll what are we talking, 23 to 25 goals probably by the end of the season? With 7 games left, he can have a goal a game. I firmly believe he's that good. And we'll create enough chances going forward. You know, this the work Skippy's been putting in, the Johnson's pace is just... And he's coming on to a real game, and he's confidence to take on players. They're just creating so much space for those two. And I don't know why he can't be hitting 25 goals by the end of the season. I firmly believe he's good enough.
As you say, it's Matty as well. There's the movement between the three of them. There's a great dynamic between the three of them. We all know Scott McDonald. We all know he's a great player. We all know what he can do. Johnson's obviously got his, you know, his pace, and he's very direct, and, you know, and I like that about him. But as you said, the three of them together, when they're rotating, you know, Johnson goes from left to right, and as you said, sometimes he just sits in the middle as well. McDonald comes back, comes forth, goes wide, goes. I get the three of them just sort of constantly interchanging, and it's a great dynamic. The way the team's set up, you know, it maybe took McGee a couple of weeks to get, you know, to realise, you know, that was what he was, or for the players to realise that was what McGee was wanting between them. But it's starting to come together really well, and, you know, that's probably been the reason that we've managed to put this run together.
I think it was Sparra said as well, you know, it's not just about what he does on the park, his engagement with fans, you know, and hospitality outside the ground, on social media, it's fantastic. I'm just grateful he's not taking me up on an offer, to be really honest, because that would get me into serious bother with the missus. But that's it. I should probably have a Twitter ban after 12 years. but it's great. It's just the fact, you know, he does respond, whether it's just one of these emoji icons or whatever. Just, you know, and it's good because he obviously appreciates the way people feel for him, and he must get a real sense of achievement, the fact he's working hard. You know, and people are seeing that, and, you know, as I say, I'd get him on a 2 year extension, whatever he's got left in his deal. I don't even know how long he's got left, but
yeah, 2 years in the summer.
Another two years,
that's
great.
2 years, fantastic. Just one last mention for individual performances on Saturday. Jay Connor Ripley was absolutely superb. A brilliant save just after we lost the first goal, which essentially kept us in the game. He made a couple of cracking saves at the start of the second half as well. He's been a very important figure for the team, particularly in recent months. I think there is elements of his game that do require work, but we didn't expect to get the finished article. That's why he's on loan. He's learning his trade at Motherwell, and he's certainly doing a very good job of it.
Well, that's it. You've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, it is a case of, if you get a young player or a young goalkeeper on loan, I think, what is he, 22, 23, then, you know, Football Manager tells us that goalkeepers don't peak to about 31, apparently. So, you know, you can't expect him to be the finished article by any means. But I think he's been fantastic this year, particularly in the games where we haven't been doing so well. Yes, he played a great part on Saturday, but I think that will often be overlooked because, you know, we're talking about Lumo and we're talking about you know, challenging for Europe and things like that. Those are the games that he perhaps goes a little bit more unnoticed. If you actually go back to the games when we were, you know, doing poorly and maybe losing 1-0 or grinding out draws and things like that, he's been fantastic all the way through. He's been consistently very, very good. When players around him haven't been quite on form, or when results haven't been going our way, Ripley has been really, really good this season. And, you know, you're talking about naming players of the year and things like that, I think you'd need to be absolutely mad not to say Lumo will probably run away from it. But I'd be surprised if, you know, if you're going to draw up a short list, I'd be surprised if Connor Ripley wasn't on it. I think he's been a really good signing this year. I think he's another one, you know, we're sitting there, a couple of weeks ago we had the podcast where we did, or a few months ago when we reviewed the year, and we absolutely tore into Barraclough, but we've just spent about a good 5-10 minutes talking about Louis Moult and Connor Ripley, who I think we've got to thank Barraclough for bringing in, particularly Ripley, because I remember being on here and we were pretty dismayed at the fact that Ripley was going to start up at Inverness despite having only joined the day before, and yet he's never looked back. He's been a fantastic goalkeeper for us, and I suppose it's one of those double-edged swords, because you just know that at the end of the season, he'll be away back down south and you'll probably never see him again up here, or at least not in Motherwell colours, which will be disappointing. But there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever he was fantastic on Saturday, and he deserved the match sponsors man of the match he got, and he fully deserved it for his saves.
I thought you were going to say he deserved his opportunity to swing in the bar. I'm quite enjoying
That was good. I managed to get quite a good wee photo of that on Instagram as well. It was he's another player, you know, talking about guys who, particularly a guy like Ripley who's on loan, you still get the impression that he has the passion for the club and he has a rapport with the fans. The swinging in the bar is a relatively new thing, but even just the way he kind of interacts with the fans during games, you get the feeling that he's not just here to get first-team football. Well, that will be his priority, but you know, he actually does have a genuine passion for the club and his teammates and the fans, and I think that's another big thing, and I think that's what's great at the moment. You know, Matty mentioned earlier about there being a good feel-good factor and being on the up, and I think that's it, because you're talking about guys like Liam Moe and Conor Ripley playing well, but they're not just playing well, they're guys who you kind of feel... It's kind of going back to those days of back when we had Higdon and Ojama and things like that, that kind of, you know, all in it together kind of feeling, which I think we sort of lost up until the tail end of last year.
Guys, there's been a lot happening in the week or so since we last recorded. The news broke last Tuesday, or it would have been last Wednesday, conveniently just after we had recorded our last podcast, that Les Hutchinson had decided to sell his stake in the club to the Welsh Society for £1. He stepped down in his role at the club. It's all a wee bit sudden, and I think details are a wee bit thin in the ground just now. But Jay, I'll start with you. It was a real surprise. I think we've been quite open in the fact that we were rather unsure of Mr. Hutchison's attitude towards the club and what he was actually getting out of it. For whatever reason, he's decided that he doesn't want to be a part of it anymore, and there's a real challenging time ahead for the Welsh Society to win over the many doubters that they have and make fan ownership a sustainable option.
It's a strange development, I think, is the way to describe it. I noticed first and foremost when it was announced that on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, there was a lot, or at least at first glance, there was a few Motherwell fans celebrating the news, sharing it as this great positive step. And I kind of felt as though I was maybe in the minority at the time, because my instant reaction to it was to be quite concerned. And in the, you know, since then, having spoken to people and read more on social media and things like that, it seems that there are a lot of Motherwell fans in that boat, which isn't surprising, because the Welsh Society for the last 5 years has failed spectacularly to engage Motherwell fans, to get Motherwell fans involved, to make them, you know, to give Motherwell fans the confidence that the Welsh Society can succeed. And that's not going to change overnight, so we still have that. And I think where the concerns are, for me at least, you know, we've had, as I said, 5 years, the goalposts have been changed multiple times, but all the way through it we've had targets, we've had requirements that need to be met before we can have fan ownership. And that's just common sense. Of course you do that. You can't just say, right, we've got 3 Welsh Society members, let's crack on. You need to have those targets there, whether it was the £1.5 million target for the overdraft facility or the current target of 2,000, I think was the last I heard, that was meant to be 2,000 members. And the idea all along was that once you meet that target, you can then proceed with fan ownership. That was the whole reason Les Hutchison came in, because we hadn't met the targets. And now we kind of find ourselves in a position where we seem to be hurtling faster towards fan ownership, despite not meeting the targets. And that's concerning, because there's no clarity on why that is. Of course there isn't. There never is. I mean, the Welsh Society have never tell you anything. I've been a member for 4 years, and you know, me and Matty were talking about it a couple of days ago, and I think I said to him that I don't feel like any more of a Welsh Society member than he is, and he's not a Welsh Society member, simply because there's no attempt to kind of make you feel as though you're a member. You pay your money, whether it's at start or monthly, and that's you serves your purpose. So there's absolutely no surprise whatsoever that there's no information on this, but it does leave open these massive questions. If we've had 5 years of targets, in particular in the last year, let's not, you know, you mentioned Les Hutchison, he is a guy who divides opinion. We don't like him. Let's just put it out there. Just personality wise, really, you know, a bit of an egomaniac, and everything seems to be a pat in the back for him. But the one thing he did do well over the last year was say, here's how it is. We need this amount of members, we need this amount of money, otherwise it's not viable. And that, to me, all along has said that you meet those targets and then you implement it. And the worrying thing at the moment is that with Les leaving, it sounds as though we're now going to move towards implementing it before we've reached the targets. Now, I don't know why that is. I don't know whether their arm's been, you know, their sort of arm's been twisted because Les has decided he doesn't want involved anymore. But my concern is that there's a belief in the Welsh Society or in the club that a bit of a do or die mentality will take over at Motherwell, or in the Motherwell support, where as soon as fan ownership is a reality, suddenly there'll be queues to join the Welsh Society. And that might be true for a few people. It might even be true overall. It may work. But if that is the situation that we've gotten ourselves into, it strikes me as being a bit of Russian roulette with the club, because I don't believe that's viable. I don't think... I think current membership is something like 1,600, of which about 500 are child members. So we're still about 900 off our 2,000 target, and that's over 5 years. That's really poor. So if we are now going to implement fan ownership so far off our target, I just don't see where the sustainability is there. And I really have my doubts that folk will suddenly flock towards it just because this is happening. In fact, I think it's more likely to be the opposite, because it kind of puts more emphasis in the Welsh Society, and I have my fear that more people will realise just how kind of inept and how it just kind of bumbles along without really doing anything. And so where do we find ourselves in 6 months, a year, when fan ownership is, you know, Les has left, fan ownership is about to happen, and we're still on 1,200 members or something like that? That's where the worries lie, and that's where the Welsh Society need to get the finger out for the first time in 5 years and actually explain what's happened.
I should possibly start by saying that we did make an approach to the Welsh Society last night to see if anyone wanted to come on. They're actually having a board meeting this evening, so couldn't provide anyone tonight, and we hope to do something in the next couple of weeks to hopefully allay some of the fears that currently exist. The thing that strikes me is the membership figures include a number of lapsed members like myself, who will take a while to be convinced that it's worth putting any more money into it. I don't want to own a football club. I've got no aspirations to own a football club. I do, however, and would do as much as I could to help sustain the future of the club. I suppose that is the main selling point, and the point they need to get across, that people back in the society is absolutely vital to ensuring the Motherwell Football Club continue to have an unbroken history and don't fall into the financial situations that the club has done in the past and many other bigger Scottish clubs have suffered from drastically.
Yeah, it's as you said, I'm not a member of the society, and I think I've discussed it a few times with you guys. And I think the biggest thing is engagement. As Jay says, he doesn't feel any more a member than I do, and you know he's put his money where his mouth is. And hats off to Jay for that, and yourself. But the fact of the matter is, you say, you know, there's been a lot of things kept secret, or it seems that way, from the society, and that's not going to attract someone to put their money into the club, because, you know, one, how's it getting spent? Two, who's spending it? And who's making these decisions? Because I always thought it was this one member, one vote. And that doesn't seem to have transpired for a few decisions recently. And I may be completely wrong there, but that's just how it seems. I mean, there's a number of things that concerned me about the announcement last week. I've tried to put a positive spin on it for myself, and try and look at some positive aspects based on the information we have. But yeah, it's some of it was concerning, because I think there was a very, very first meeting at the, I can't remember the name of the hotel in Strathclyde Park, but I think Leanne Demister sat there and said that, you know, they had to go through, because the shares were being gifted from John Boyle, they had to go through, I think it was the Financial Standards Authority, and it was, they had to meet a funding limit, then X amount of shares would be released, and then the next one. And I think that's when Les came into the club, was I think we were going to miss the target. Was it a year past November or something like that? So he's come in and filled that gap. And I suppose, first and foremost, in that aspect, thanks to him for doing that, because he has plugged that gap. But as you say, we seem to have struggled to meet targets, as Jay's pointed out. But I kind of try and look at it as well. We've now got one sort of person we need to pay back a loan to. You know, what are the repayment schedules going to be like beyond that? How much has the society actually managed to bring in an income? I think it was quoted 96,000 per year they've got. How much of a gap does that fill? Does the 240,000 they're trying to raise each year, Is that we need that for the club to survive, or is that going to give us some of that overdraft facility? So even now, as a non-member, I still don't really know the answer to those questions, and I don't seem to have seen anything anywhere that's going to give me those answers. So I don't know if they're planning a Q&A moving forward or what, but the flip of it is, I said on a podcast that, you know, if a club needed £1,000 off me, it was going to shut the doors tomorrow, I would give it to them. And I'm now at a stage where I'm not going to give them £1,000, but I'm considering the monthly subscription, because if this is us moving towards this sort of now or never mentality, then, you know, I probably should put my hand in my pocket. But like you, I don't want to own a football club. I don't have to have that concern. But yes, I think there's still a lot of unanswered questions, and the engagement has to be better for people with society. So I don't know how they're going to do that, who's going to do it, but let's hope that something, you know, happens between now and the end of the season, and maybe a good finishing top six maybe a vital thing, you never know, pushing for a European spot and get a few good factor back, and then live on in the back of that like they should have done with the playoffs. Should have, you know, taken that and galvanised it and used it in a positive manner. So we'll see what happens.
Basta, I think the key points from Jay and Matty is there that the next 5 or 6 weeks are absolutely vital. We've had times in the past where the society have made a big noise about doing A, B and C, but haven't then followed it up with much action. Things tend to go quiet. And to a certain extent, people forget that the Welsh Society are actually operating and exist. There's no room for that happening again now. It's got to be all guns blazing and really convincing the fans that they are the right people to be taking the club forward.
Well, I don't really, yourselves, I've not really heard anything. There's not really been much feedback from the society in a while. It's really kind of confusing. I don't really know anything about it, to be honest with you. You know, I stick a tenner away, you know, and they through the direct debit for them. I get the odd email. I don't even know what half of them say, to be honest with you. Have a quick look at it, and if it's something, you know, that I've seen, maybe post it on Twitter or something. It just gets closed down again. But there's not really been much of a. There's been a silence from them. Obviously, you know, they were trying to. You don't tell everybody what's happening as you're doing your business, I suppose. So, as this was being dealt with, Wales. So, I just don't know. To be honest with you, I'm getting a bit sick fed up. I like yourselves. I don't want to own a football club either. I'm willing to give them, you know, their £10 a month. I don't hear of any sort of votes or anything. The last sort of noise I heard from them was when they were trying to put a couple of new members on the board. But I've really honestly got no real interest in it at the moment. It's kind of bad when, you know, it's the main point that we're looking at the news. So it's kind of bad that I literally don't care, to be honest with you. I don't know where that would come. I don't know how to change that in myself. I just honestly don't care.
I think that's a pretty good point, because it's been on for so long. I think, you know, as someone who joined 4 years ago and who was genuinely really excited at the start, I mean, I paid £300 that I didn't even have. I used an overdraft to basically get into debt because I was kind of caught up in the idea of fan ownership. And, you know, the Welsh Society have done a fantastic job in 4 years of absolutely destroying any, you know, anything that even resembles that excitement that was there. I think people are kind of sick, fed up with it. And I think that gives the impression, or at least puts us in a position where you have to ask yourself, why is it still rumbling on? I, like lots of people, like the idea of fan ownership. It's something I've supported from the start. But do you get to a point where you go, right, lads, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. We've not got the folk. Because it just, we talk about how the Welsh Society is inept and how mediocre at their communication and how they don't do this correctly and they're poor at that. But at times you wonder if it is that they're inept or whether there's just no, they just don't think they need to put that much effort in. I think at times it almost seems as though the Welsh society believes itself to have a God-given right to own the football club. And this kind of plays into that mindset. You know, who cares about targets anymore? Because, you know, we're just going to go ahead with it. Now, that's obviously speculation. It might be that Les Hutchinson's done a joke and, you know, we're forced into this position. But it does have a kind of a by any means necessary feel about it, rather than setting the targets that make it sustainable, that will make it a success, and then either reaching that target and implementing it, or not reaching it and accepting that, okay, it's not doable. Instead, we seem to just be, you know, desperate to implement fan ownership. And I get the scare stories about, you know, Argentinian nutters and all that. I get that, you know, the alternative might not be great, or there might not be another buyer for 2, 3, 5, 10 years or whatever. But it just, it's worrying. I find it quite concerning that we just seem to be so determined and so, you know, narrow-minded that we are going to implement fan ownership, that there doesn't seem to be any other option anymore. It is do or die. And at the moment, based on the membership list and based on the fact that guys like Buster, who, you know, passionate Motherwell fan, isn't even bothered anymore, isn't interested anymore, then it's hard to see where, you know, where the success is going to come from.
So just a final one in this. Les Hutchinson was at the club for just under 16 months. What would you say his legacy has been at the club? Certainly when we listened back to his podcast, which was recorded just over a year ago, certainly would say he was one of the more flamboyant, less humble characters that we've had on. It was very, very interesting. He always had something to say, whether he agreed with it or not. I don't know, apart from, I'm struggling to see though completely what good his time at the club did.
I think in that one for me, I suppose last January, he's obviously loosened the purse strings a wee bit because we were on a sticky wicket. I think credit is due. They realised that the squad of players that were at the club at the time probably weren't going to keep us, or were going to struggle to keep us up. So, you know, that's probably one positive.
But on the same token,
help fund us to keep us up in that aspect.
On the same token, he's obviously done that, but coming into the new season, or the current season as it is, we continued to allow us to spend and spend and spend, increasing the debt owed to him, and players that was just getting to the ridiculous stage. Your guys like your Theo Robinsons, your guys like your Craig Sampsons, which just seemed that someone was okay in these deals. He was the only one with the authority to do so. It just seemed utter madness that he would authorise such spending. Particularly, you think of Sampson actually worked his release from another Scottish Premiership club. There is no way that he's come to Fir Park on a small salary. It just seems absolutely crazy that we continue to allow Ian Barraclough, a manager that was under pressure, to spend and bring in players the way he did. And I think while he has perhaps helped keep us in the top flight, his spending put us in danger going out at the other end, though?
I suppose it depends in the model and how they're balancing it. Because, as I say, you can come back to you know, him stepping aside now. You know, what are the repayment schedule going to be like? What are the payments going to be? You know, is he happy to take lots of payments, small payments over a long period of time? What is the total debt? What do we owe him? Which is interesting. I suppose, the you know, a positive as I see it is there's no, or I perceive it, unless I'm completely wrong, there's no bank debt there. We don't owe a bank a penny. No one can foreclose on us. In that sense, well, less good, but, you know, he'd be the main debtor, so therefore he'd have a right to certain aspects of the club. But for me, that's quite a positive, that we're in that position where someone's sitting there and will hopefully get drip-fed his payments back on a small basis. No, but I get what you're saying, Andy. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of the debt, or, you know, how those decisions impacted on the P&L of the football club, but you would imagine that some of these signings have been have been challenging. Then they'll probably try and argue that, you know, the development of players like Cadden and Hall and possibly Thomas in a year's time, or even Louis Moult, is going to bring us six, seven figure numbers. So that, but then again, as you see, you're bulking a squad out with what we class as seasoned professionals who aren't going to come for, you know, £500-600 a week. So yeah, there's aspects of that you could argue that he has got wrong, but at the same time, I say, going back to the January thing last year, I was delighted because we were in a really difficult position. But I think that's one of the biggest challenges now is moving forward, is working within a budget. I think that was always a problem under Dempster as well, is that we're budgeting two cup runs in the top six. And it was just, you know, based on our income, it was always going to be difficult. You know, how many times did we finish? I think we finished second twice and we lost money. You know, that shouldn't be happening. But I think that'll be one of the challenges for the society, and all the people at the top of the society are well equipped to deal with that. I was going to say that's exactly it. To be honest with you, the one thing I was going to say was the club, you know, as a company, I suppose, you know, they have to break even, basically. I think everything they get from the society, from the fans, whatever, it's got to go down as a bonus. We have to start budgeting sensibly to break even. And, you know, I think if we start to do that, we're going to find our level, but we might find we might not be a Premier League team, depending obviously on how things work out. But we have to start breaking even as a business before we start relying on, what is it, 100 grand we mentioned earlier from the Welsh Society, because that's just not viable, basically.
I suppose,
in terms of what Les did as well, there's always going to be an element of short-termism, because, you know, he was planning for a change in youth development model that we would reap the benefits of, and, you know, 2 years after he came in. And I dare say we're beginning to see that. You know, some may argue that it's been more out of circumstance that some of these players have come through, rather than choice. And again, some of the signings, the serious signings they made under Ian Barraclough in terms of experienced players, that, you know, if you're a genuine interest in youth development, some of these people may not have come in. But, you know, I dare say that's something else. If there is a genuine focus on youth development at the football club, which we've seen to have seen some progress in, not just with the guys that have broken through, but the under 20s, then does he get a bit of credit for that? But, you know, it was in his mission statement for the club, so, you know, is that one of the fruits of his labour? You mentioned them, you know, the players coming through, is it through choice or necessity? But every time that's brought up, I always, you know, think back to, you know, 2002, where the best crop of youngsters that I've seen come through because of necessity rather than choice. You know, so it's one of those things where it could be a great thing. You know, guys like Ben Hall, Christy Cadden, whatever, Stettman, you know, you never know, they could make us a shoebox in the future, hopefully in a couple of years' time they will, and they're going to make their own money. Other than maybe Jamie Murphy and Sean Hutchison, there's no really anybody else that were brought through choice, you know.
We'll wrap things up for this week with this week's Remember Well question. Jay, in your absence, we had an absolute 10 out of 10 performance from Buster. I'm almost reluctant to let you back in. It's been sweeping the internet, the chat about this. Even overshadowed my cameo in Clyde One during the week. But we'll give you one last go at this. Your last hurrah, maybe.
Me or Buster? I thought Buster was getting a gig. That would have been great.
No, definitely not me.
Well, it was. I think it was yourself, Sparrow, that actually set the question this week. A bit of creativity required this one for. I suppose it's a bit off the ball esque. Getting Motherwell player names into songs. Motherwell players of past or present into song titles or song lyrics. So, will you guys have a wee think of possible entries? We've got Craig went with Truly Madly Lasley by Savage Garden. We've got Ian Pritchard, Jerry Britton and the Stars by Tiny Temper, or The Bartender and the Keith by Stereophonics. Roy Purcell also goes with the Keith Thief patter with Gypsies, Tramps and Keith, and also I Would Walk 500 Miles. Colin Fox, Thermos Be an Angel by the Eurythmics. Andy Howie. Andy Howie goes with Surprise No One Came Up with Super Cooper by ABBA. And Colin Fox goes with the, you know, the good old Duran Duran View to a Kill for Mutia Kill. But I think the four, I've isolated these four as I think being the best ones. We've got Craig Holmes, Have I Told You Hately That I Love You, that Rod Stewart classic. Johnny Walnut goes with Billy Davis Eyes. There's Jonesy on Twitter, goes with I Must Can't Get You Out of My Head by Kylie Minogue. And John Maguire went with the Beatles classic Lindquist and Shout. So I don't know if you guys have got any. I think I bored at work today. Angle of Harlem by U2, Fra Kerra Firma by the Young Knives, or Drowning Pool's classic Let the Roddies Hit the Floor.
That's a belter, to be fair. I like that one. We have a winner. On you go, Spur.
I was struggling. I've kind of thought Daly really wanted to hurt me. that's possibly the best I can come up with.
The only one I could think of, Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Crumb Here. You know, so couldn't really think any. I thought of one or two, and then when I went on the, you know, the social media sites, I seen there was a lot better for the players I was suggesting, so they get quickly binned.
Matty,
I don't know, nine mate. I'm not even going to attempt to get involved in that. I can't beat some of those belters.
I think we should go for creative Remember Well questions more often. Next week, send us in a picture of your favourite player.
Mate, this is a podcast.
Well, bollocks. I'm going to scrap that.
We'll send you a picture then, man.
Describe your picture. Right, is there anything else? Can we think of anything else on the agenda? All right, I'm the host.
Hello.
No, in that case, well, we'll just...
International Week.
Exactly, what a load of bollocks, eh? You look at... We're at our most exciting point of the season. You look even down south, you've got the stuff with Leicester and Spurs battling out at the top, and then you've got you actually... break off for a week while players try and avoid going into tackles, and club managers are absolutely terrified to send their players away and the possibility of them getting injured. I noticed Norwich have already basically instructed Whittaker and Naismith to pull out the Scotland squad. It just seems both Norwich City players, both involved in a relegation scrap. In England, it's clearly much more important than friendlies against the Czech Republic and Denmark, particularly when you're not actually going to the Euros in the summer.
Well, given Martin McGee's on Sky Sports News at the moment and he's Scotland tracky, I think our own manager would probably disagree with the sentiments.
I see we also provided our under-20s to help train the Scottish national squad. That'll surely be a good learning curve for the guys. That's... I completely agree with utilising them in that way. It's obviously, when there's no games on, the players are entitled to a couple of days off, but it's good they're kind of letting them, keeping them ticking over, so to speak. And Zeke Lasley's also in Germany doing his coaching courses. Oh, one big point before the end, James McFadden's injury, which a broken ankle surely ends his career at Motherwell. That's a very disappointing bit of news, despite the fact his return has been rather uninspiring, it must be said.
I think the one point I noticed when I heard about McFadden's broken ankle was, I think I said to you guys at the time, I don't know if it was Saturday night or Sunday morning, but that's the kind of news that would be met with, you know, anguish by the Motherwell support, and yet everybody was too busy worshipping Louis Molt to really care. And I think if there's any sign of how much of a god Louis Molt is, it's the fact that nobody really seems that bothered that James McFadden's broke his ankle. But in saying his career, I don't think his career's finished. I think
his mother's career is finished.
No, his mother's career will never be finished. He'll probably leave at the end of the season, you know, drift about for a year, and then we'll sign him up for a 3-month deal or something. We'll give him.
I wouldn't be disappointed to that. I wouldn't be adverse to a fifth spell.
He's not on a fifth spell already.
Oh, Christ knows. The amount of times he's been back for training, it could be a 105th spell, to be fair. But I think it's just, you just kind of hoped you would see it end in better fashion. It would be nice to see him score another goal for Motherwell, and it looks very unlikely that he'll even get the chance to play between now and the end of the season. If he does, then it surely will only be a very brief cameo, kind of like his stint since he came in January. But disappointing to hear, and it's just been such a frustrating career for him, I suppose, in terms of injuries that they have almost stagnated him from being a real great of the game. Although we regard him as a great, I don't think there's many doubts that he could have went on to be so much more if it wasn't for these niggly injuries, and obviously a broken ankle's a good bit more serious than that.
The one thing that I've always been sort of gutted about is that he never made that Hall of Fame 50 cap mark. What's it, 48 or something?
Yeah.
So it's upsetting. I mean, when he came into the Scotland team, I thought he was going to break scoring records and everything. And then he sort of seemed to go from, you know, a sort of striker to a left midfielder, basically. And, you know, the goals maybe slowed down a wee bit, but I don't know. I'm still kind of gutted that he didn't get that 50th cap and at least get into that, you know, that sort of Hall of Fame.
There will always be Paris.
It's interesting enough that it's fate or it's the way it kind of works out. If he had actually, been playing regularly for us and had been playing well, you look at, I'm not suggesting that he would have made the squads for these games, but, you know, in another world, might have, you know, been a first team fixture in our kind of resurgent form at the moment and get into a squad that's got the likes of, you know, Kenny McLean and things like that. I know that these squads are for the future, but this could have been the moment that he got those two last caps, and it's not to be. But, I mean, all joking aside, he is an absolute legend, and it would be good if he could, you know, if he doesn't come back, at least in the playing side, it would be good to see if we can get him sorted up with, you know, some sort of coaching role at the club or something along those lines.
I'm still hoping he's going to come back last game of the season and score a 93rd minute belter to put us into Europe. I mean, that's how I see playing out, to be honest.
The club doctors just need to follow the advice of the podcast and he'll be back for the Cal again.
Just touching the international break, the only thing I'd say about it would be interesting to see how we perform after it, because it's normally notable that any club managers who go away with Scotland's assistants tend to struggle the game they come back, because I think we didn't have a great record under McCall when he'd taken on the Scotland job. I mean, we were just rotten. But I was the same with Peter Houston when he was in charge of Dundee United. They always struggled the week after. So it'll be interesting to see how we're performing the week after McGee's been away. So just thought I'd tell you that.
It shall be interesting. And we'll be back next Monday anyway to preview the Dundee game. There might be a few surprises in the podcast next week. You never know. Guys, thank you very much.
Well, maybe for them for that, man. Thank you. Cheers.
You were going to try and say something snide there, but you never got the chance.
No, well, just
Jay, thank you very much, mate. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you, goodbye. On Lump Street, the brick hard boy repeats scripted lies. Eyes to the ground.